asked by Ron to give a special mini-series on the topic of the Hebrew alphabet and its development, which is something I'm actually not a very big expert on, so we're going to spend a couple of days to get me acquainted with it. But I don't have enough handouts, so I'm going to have a corporate table. It's almost enough.
One, two, three, four.
Don't you go around the office and make it 40,000? No, it's okay. That'll be enough. We'll be just looking together. Okay, so we're actually going to do several photocopies today, but this is the, from the Sectarii Judaica, you have various different ways of writing the Hebrew alphabet. And essentially the main ones which concern us are the one at the top, which is the standard Hebrew alphabet, which you call Tav Ashuri.
Tav Ashuri, which literally means Assyrian script, even though the Assyrians don't write the script.
Whatever language the Assyrians use, they don't write with the script, but nevertheless we call it Assyrian script. That's the line which is not numbered on top. The other one which concerns us is primarily, although there are various variations, is here line number four. Line number four is the Samaritan script, and the Samaritan script is ancient Sfat Ivrit, between Hebrew script. And our assumption is that for most of the period of the first Beit HaMikdash, at least, in general use was script number five. That's how the Samaritans got a hold of it. The Samaritans were a group of people who were brought in by Sancheirib. Sancheirib had a resettlement program. Sancheirib was the king of the Assyrians, and he had a resettlement program in which he took the 10 tribes from the northern kingdom, which he conquered, and brought them to somewhere in the area of what we call today Afghanistan, India, Pakistan. And he brought people from other lands to settle in Samaria, from Rome.
Can you
round? Yeah, sure.
Okay.
They're not holy.
I think I know
this one here.
So what?
I don't get it. So I didn't
expect
it.
Number one is the Syrian.
All right, just I want to
go. What?
And the top one is the
Hebrew. Okay. So the...
So what is the Syrian script being
to? Oh, wait. We're just starting today. Patience. You want everything at once?
Yeah.
The Samaritans were the resettled population from somewhere else, I assume, from somewhere out east, which was brought to settle the land of Israel, the area of the northern tribes, by Sancheirib and his resettlement program. Now, these fellows who came to live in the land, they were, according to the Tanakh, they were attacked by lions, and the lions were decimating their population. As a result, they converted to Judaism. The tremendous machlokes through many, many generations in the Talmud, as well through the Mishnah, through the Gemara, whether Samaritans were considered to be legitimate converts or whether they were not legitimate converts because they only converted out of fear of the lions, and in fact they were still worshipping idolatry behind our backs. And there's so many sugyas. I think also you have a gittin around Daf Yud. You have a sugya about the Samaritans and Samaritans signed on a document. I don't know if you've gotten that part of the dream. Nowhere near, okay. But there's also a sugya, a discussion over there about whether Samaritan witnesses are kosher for a get or not kosher for a get, because it still was a major issue until the end of the time of the Gemara, at which time the Samaritans were decided to be permanently excluded because they were not legitimate converts. But the Samaritans still exist to this day, and they still have the ruins of their temple. Their temple was built on... Where is her temple built? We're in Samaria. Nobody knows.
What?
Shem and Har Gerizim. Does anybody know what Har Gerizim? Does anybody else need? Har Gerizim and Har Ebal were? Not the mountains on which the blessings were held and the curses were held, right? Right. And there are two big mountains on two sides of a valley near Shem. And they built their temple, their Beis HaMikdash and HaGrizim, and every year they go with their Kohen Gadol, and they sacrifice the Korban Pesach. It's a very famous ceremony. They sacrifice the Korban Pesach on the Eve of Pesach, and they have a whole Pesach ritual. There are about 1,000 Samaritans, I believe, today in the world. But wait, 1 second. They hold they are the authentic Jews, and we are all forgeries. And moreover, they have their own Sefer Torah. And their Sefer Torah is written in this print, meaning in this script, Sat Ivri. Yeah. Unbroken chain of existence. The Tanakh in Ezra and Nehemiah describes in great detail how the Samaritans tried to delay and cancel the building of the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. They tried to get the Jews who lived in Yerushalayim in trouble with the authorities back in Persia. They tried to stymie the Jews at every turn. They were ultimately unsuccessful. But they continue to exist. They are not the same group, although sometimes they get confused as the Karaites. The Karaites were splinter movements which arose much later. The Karaites, of course, have, in similar to the Samaritans, they only accept the written law, not the oral tradition. But they're not the same group. The Karaites were Jewish. They're not accepted back into the fold at this point because we assume that their lineage is very messed up. But they are technically Jewish because they stem from Jewish origins. Whereas the Samaritans are regarded to be technically not Jewish.
Okay, so wait. The Karaites, how many of them are there?
A few thousand.
And who is, what script do they hold by?
No, they use our script.
They use our script. Where do they live?
Where do they live? They live all over the world. Mm-hmm. There were what?
I know they live.
Yeah, there was a center in Crimea. They are in Israel today, and all sorts of other places in the world. There is a website, Karaites.com. I'm not kidding. It does exist. If you go to Karaites.com, you will find where they exist today, and you will find how their arch enemy was the Sadia Gaon, one of our great scholars of all time, because he was the major antagonist of the Karaites who flourished during his time.
What was his name?
Rabbi Sadia Gaon.
What was the Karaites called?
It seems like they were, according to the Ravid at least, they were a direct continuation of the Sadducees, the Stokes.
Right.
It's not clear that that's 100% correct, because it seems like there was a break in the between. But they held the same thing, basically, that the oral law is not from Sinai, and therefore they're not bound by it, nor bound by any rabbinic decree. That means, for example, they put their tefillin literally between the eyes, because it says Bnei Necha. It says between the eyes. So the rabbi said, no, the tradition is, doesn't mean between the eyes, but rather parallel to between the eyes. But they say that's not what it says in the Torah, so they put their tefillin between their eyes.
They put it like right here? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can't see it.
I imagine they make it small enough they can still see on the other side of it.
Strap it on.
I don't know what it is.
You're asking me? There's a Karaite temple in Jerusalem, in the Old City. There's flaws in the Karaite system, but I'm sure that since they managed to survive this long, they managed to find a way to live with them. Yeah. Well, you have to have these parchments between your much balls, between your eyes. That's the minimum, right? I don't know exactly what they do and what they don't do, but the Karaites are many more Karaites than there are Samaritans. And they unlike the Samaritans, do identify in the Israeli-Arab dispute with the Israelis.
K-A-R-A-I-T-E-S.
Yes. The Palestinians don't like them, you know.
I don't think so. But they're not so many of them.
And they are considered Jewish, logically?
Well, they are logically Jewish, but that's problematic because since they haven't had our standards of marriage and divorce, so we assume that all of them are mamzerim, recently. We don't know who is.
They're treated as mamzers?
Yeah.
So they can't marry into the rest of the Jewish people.
Right.
But they are Jewish.
Right.
Mamzer, you can marry Karek.
Yeah. that's the problem. You know, there's a whole issue. There have been several times, once we're on this digression, there have been several times in the course of the past 50 years or so that this issue has arisen about groups which have rejoined the Jewish people after several hundred or perhaps even thousand years outside the fold. The first major issue was the B'nai Israel Jews from India. The B'nai Israel Jews from India were indigenous Jewish population for many hundreds, perhaps thousands of years. They claimed that they came after the destruction of the first temple. And they were the only Jews in India till the Iraqi Jews started coming as a result of commerce in the early 1800s. Well, when they came, they found that the B'nai Israel Jews had some Jewish customs, but they had no rabbinic scriptures. They had no rabbinic Judaism. Not only that, they didn't really have, therefore, a valid form of divorce, which is what we would expect if you were a halachic Jew. So the big problem is a tremendous, tremendous issue in halacha, whether B'nai Israel can actually marry Jews or not marry Jews because of this issue. One thing they claim, by the way, is that divorce was not a problem because in India there's a very quaint custom, which it seems to be Israel also follows to a certain extent. If a husband did not like a wife, he just burned her alive. That was the custom in the old days in India. But men were men, so they used to burn their wives. So
I'm feeling sorry for the women, you know. Every religion is really against women.
The Jews would do this too?
The Jews in India, yeah. That's what they say. That's B'nai Israel. B'nai Israel, this group. Okay? So in any event,
not all the Indian Jews, though.
No, not the Iraqis.
Not the good ones.
Yeah,
no,
but actually, see,
there are like three or four groups. I've read a book on this.
Forget about the Indian. Yeah, there's the Cochin Jews. He's right. There's the Cochin Jews, and among the Cochin Jews, there are two groups. There's the whites and the blacks. And the blacks, I don't think it's actually skin color. I think it's just what they call it. And the whites claim the blacks are not Jews, and they're the only authentic Jews. And the blacks claim the whites are not Jews, and they are the only authentic Jews. So you have groups like that.
What we hold?
What? No. We don't know. So
the killer ones. The
great
ones.
So to their advantage, they regard them as not Jewish. Because the moment you regard them as Jewish, you have all sorts of problems. But if you assume that they're not Jewish, then they say, no, convert. And you can marry almost anybody. Not Kohanim, but you can marry almost anybody else. And in fact, I had, in my experience in yeshiva several years ago, there was a fellow in yeshiva in Far Rockaway with us, who was from descended from B'nai Israel, and he made a shidduch with an Ashkenazi girl who lived in Far Rockaway, whose father was a student of Rav Tzuvia Goldstein, who was a prominent poskim in Brooklyn. Rav Tzuvia Goldstein told the father to break the shidduch, because and then he posts him, Eliezer, the disciple, or others who hold that the B'nai Israel can't marry into Jewish people. So therefore, they broke up the shidduch. Ultimately, he got married because there are other poskim who hold that they can marry. The basis for permitting it is either, one of the two things, is that they never had divorce. So therefore, it doesn't matter. Or the other premise is that it's based on every individual B'nai Israel who comes before us, it's a fake vapor. A suffix on top of a suffix, a doubt on top of a doubt. Suffix, whether he's Jewish or not Jewish, but suffix is not Jewish or Jewish. If he's not Jewish, it's better. But then it's for sure not a mamzer. Non-Jews cannot become mamzer. Even if he's Jewish, it's a suffix if there's any issue of divorce, questionable divorce and remarriage in his lineage or not. So therefore, we can be leaning on each individual one who comes in front of us.
So wait, what was the deal with him? And she had a questionable background, so she went through a conversion.
No, he was special. He was special background.
He went through a conversion.
He went through a conversion, yeah.
So he went through a conversion.
He went through a conversion, yeah.
And what was the problem? The problem was that they got married. He got married to a woman.
He got engaged to this girl, and ultimately, they forced him to break it up.
Even if he was a mamzer, getting converted didn't make a difference.
No, if he's a mamzer, you can't convert. It doesn't work that way.
You're
already Jewish. You can't be non-Jewish.
But he went through the conversion, and then they got married.
No, but that still is not, because those the people posting were machmir, they hold that they are Jewish to begin with.
Why?
Because they claim they're Jews.
Well,
why should we accept this so their claim up to the same time?
Had he gone through the conversion anyways at that point?
Yeah, but that's the rumor the posting. No, he went through conversion beforehand.
Oh, but he claimed he was Jewish
before. But they really believe they're Jewish. They're just doing to placate us. That was their perspective.
Okay.
The same thing is true about the Ethiopian Jews.
Where did he come from, the guy?
His parents from India. I don't remember where he was
from. India, okay.
Yeah. All right. Mamish from India. So the same thing is true about the Ethiopian Jews. Same issue, right? Because the Ethiopian Jews, also, they claim they're Jewish. They have some customs. They certainly don't have rabbinic Judaism. And, again, the question would be a question around the virus. So it's against to our halachic advantage to assume that they're not Jewish. Because then you don't have the problem, right? The moment you assume that they were Jewish all the time, so you have a lot of serious problems.
Where do we hold on this? I mean, because,
how do you find we?
I mean, we as a Jewish people.
Argue about it.
We argue about
that's
it.
That's what we do as Jews.
So the Ethiopian Jews aren't real Jews? They're questionable. They have questionable status.
Many of them convert.
Indian Jews?
Many of them convert.
Many of them convert too.
Yeah. Then they're for sure real Jews.
You get it, for sure.
Yeah.
The Yemenite community is equally as old in its segregation prior to the rabbinic Judaism, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
No?
They're part of it.
No, they're real. They are strict Maimonideans.
Okay.
They are absolutely the Yemenite Jews.
Oh, Yemenite Jews?
They have absolute fealty to Maimonides' rulers. So clearly they have much more than any other segment of Judaism. So clearly they have the oral tradition. So there was unbroken interaction, maybe not frequent interaction, but it was unbroken interaction with the Yemenites. What they claim, and everybody thinks they're the most authentic, what they claim is that they're the most authentic Jews, right? Because their tradition was purest, it was not adulterated, they came right after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, they stayed in place, and they didn't have any intermarriage conversion, so therefore they are the purest lineage, the purest pronunciation.
They had intermarriage. There's no question about that.
What?
They had intermarriage, and I'll tell you this.
The Yemenites
saw
that and so well.
Okay.
So these other communities, which were separated off at such an early time and don't have any traces of rabbinic Judaism, yet do we claim that they lost it? Or did
no.
it come about later?
Good question. So, there's a big issue. Oh, this is really not what we were planning to talk about today, but hey, what's the difference? So, there's a big issue, of course, the question of the 10 tribes. There is an organization, I forget its name, this puts my mind a moment.
Shias.com has
no.
it on there.
What?
You go to Shias.com, I think, or something like that. There's a whole section on the 10 lost tribes and where they think they are. They think it's Japanese culture.
Right, so there's a national organization run by Rabbi Elio Abichayo, who actively promotes the mass immigration of lots and lots of tribes from the, India and beyond, and says, you look at the Afghans. You see pictures of the Afghans? They really look Jewish to me. So they have long beards. They look like rabbis, all of them, as far as I'm concerned. So the, So in any event, he's sorry, he doesn't look the same. So the thing is that many of these tribes, as Rabbi Abichayo pointed out, have some type of Jewish tradition. Like some of them keep a Sabbath on Saturday, others then abstain from pork. There are all sorts of religions. Some of them have pagans. There are all sorts of vestiges which one could claim come from an ancient affiliation with the Jewish people, which is what they claim, these tribes. when they find out about Israel, it's a good place to go because it's much better than living where they are. So they immediately claim that, you know, we are Jewish, and we always had this in mind, et cetera, et cetera. The other opinion, the opinion which holds that they're not Jewish, again, to say they're Jewish is always creates problems. To say they're not Jewish is based on the assumption that Jews travel throughout the world, as they in fact did, and, you know, they settled in various different places, or they passed by various different places, and the people saw their customs, and the customs were fun-looking customs, so people adopted them because they looked like they were interesting and attractive to the native population. So the fact that they keep these customs does not indicate that they're from the lost tribe, but rather indicates that somehow, at some point in history, some Jews had interaction with them.
Lineage, but the thing is, it's not likely that the lineage is strictly through the mother's side. You know what I mean?
That's a good point. It's interesting you bring that up because I was about to mention there is a tribe of blacks in South Africa who have the same DNA as Kohanim. In other words, it's been proven that almost all Kohanim, obviously the ones who are a very high percent, have a certain genetic code which is similar and which points to the common ancestor. So this is, we don't actually use it to test if people are Kohanim or not. But of course this goes down to the father's side, right? It doesn't go through the mother's side. For reasons I don't understand, genetic markers go through the father's side, not through the mother's side. So these people, all these people down there, all those that tribe, they may well be descended from Aaron HaKohen, but they are definitely not Jewish.
What if Aaron was from the black? What's the other black ancestor?
Does that bother us in any way?
No, it's not a problem.
We're not racist. Yeah.
We're not racist. We're so ground to things. There may not be descendants of Aaron, but they may
be descendants of Aaron's grandparents.
I'm saying Aaron could have been descended from them.
Okay. He didn't check anything before.
That doesn't matter.
I don't know how they deal with that. I know what you're saying. I don't know how they deal with that. I really don't know. There is some common ancestor. I don't know how they tell where the ancestor was along the line. That I'm not aware of.
Because they
Yeah, it could be from Levi. That's what you're saying.
They made the determination that after 16 generations, if you're like an African American, there's no trace in the genetic code. The skin color. It's like completely disappeared after 16 generations.
That's important because black skin color is dominant, in genetics.
But if you marry a white, if they marry white again and again and again and again for 16 generations, there is no trace.
Anyway, it's beyond my area of expertise, so I can't comment. You have to go ask the geneticist. Anyway, so getting back to the issue of script. By the way, many of these, before I get back to the issue, most of these cultures, the Ethiopians, the Bnei Israel, they did not have a sacred Torah with them. They didn't have it. Were they to have had a sacred Torah, which they used all these years, that would have been pretty good proof that, somehow they got, they didn't steal it, we assume, they got a sacred Torah and they kept this tradition. If they stole it, how they figured out how to lane it. But they didn't actually have a sacred Torah, so therefore the issue of, was difficult to prove, and of course the Samaritans are now, that was spent a one-up on all these people since they actually had a sacred Torah. Yeah.
There's a wedded question. In America, we have this intermarriage right now. It's really weird, 60-70%. And maybe now we don't necessarily see, but maybe two or three generations down the road, we're not going to, with all these intermarriages going on, we might not know who's really Jewish, who's not Jewish. All these people.
What four generations?
What?
There's always a problem, but somehow, some way will be found to deal with it. It's usually we deal with these things on an individual basis, not everybody to get it.
There's different problems with this though, because in the past, a rabbi told me, that whole idea of Kwanim, if they marry somebody who is a divorcee, like those kids end up being mongers for 10 generations.
Not mongers. They're not Kohanim.
What?
They're not Kohanim.
They can't go up and
go out to the congregation.
But you have another one of these. They can't marry into the Jewish community.
I don't have enough of this either.
They can't have
Kohanim.
They're not
Mumsers. They're called something else. Because it's not considered a forbidden relationship to the extent of adultery. It's considered something that
I have no clarification on this, because I'll tell you, a guy came into the shul.
Yeah, but sometimes one
guy came into the shul where I got him back home, and he was a Kohen, and he had married a divorcee, and he felt that he was completely
he is still a Kohen.
Well, he's still a Kohen.
His children are. They're not Kohen. What's the big deal? They get Shlishi. They don't get Kohen.
They're Jews.
Because he's married a divorcee, that was it, he's cut off from the Jewish people.
He wasn't raised strictly Orthodox, because then he would know that what
the case. Well, listen,
I don't worry about them, they were, that's just it.
Okay, Rabbi Shai, onward.
If I see the guy again, he only showed up once.
What we are looking at over here is the Gemara Shabbos, that's Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph. And the Gemara Shabbos here is talking about the Hebrew writing. This is all about various different letters. And we're talking about mem to begin with. And the question is, these open mems and closed mems, the final mems and mems in the middle or beginning of the word, where do they come from, and is it an impediment to the kashrus of the Sefer Torah, or an impediment to the kashrus of the Tanakh in general, that the mem has to be written the right way, or to be written either way, do you have an option how to do it? Okay? So,
Can I get your email after this, too, so I can transfer it to this guy, if you have any questions, incidentally? Yeah? No, I'm serious. This is no joke,
Nobody's joking.
We in this class never tell any jokes. Absolutely forbidden. Okay, so that's it. Glad you'd be at hstas.org.
So we're free.
No, it's different. No, Friday starts. Okay, so the Gemara says, the Amar Abchisa. Now, with the right at the top, the Gemara says you can write a mem which is open as a mem which was closed. So Rav Chisda says, mem v'samech, the mem and the samech in the luchos, in the Ten Commandments, everybody see that? Kuf Dalet. Not Kuf Gimel Beis, not Kuf Dalet. Kuf Dalet. Okay? Well, first point. So Rav Chisda, mem v'samech shel the luchos, the mem and the samech which were in the Ten Commandments, the Nei Sol Yoyim. What?
They exploded.
It had to float. Why is this? Because if you here you have the Ten Commandments, right? The two tablets. And here you have, let's say, a Mem. Mem Sofis. Now, the Mem Sofis, Chazal tell us, the Luchos were drilled through from side to side. In other words, from the back of the luchos, you'd also see, let's say this mem went all the way through to the other side. So of course, if the mem went all the way through to the other side, how is the middle part of the mem standing? Mm-hmm. Right? On all sides, it's
just like the stomach.
Right, same thing, it says mem shel the stomach, right. So it says both, the mem and the stomach, b'nei sol yomdin, means that they were both standing only because of miracles, because otherwise the inside would fall out. Okay. So, now take a look at your sheet, your alphabet sheet. So, Mem and Samech doesn't have final letters here. Oh, the Samach. Samach. Doesn't matter. Samach. The Samach and C is important. We're going to see that in Yerushalmi, a different opinion than the Babli. So first, in the, we're not going to get there today, but first in the Babli, clearly the only way a Samach would be a Nes if it's in Aramaic. Because if you look at number 5, that's Samach. There's no written miracle required. It's not completely severed from the surrounding area at any point. If the Luchos were given in Ksav Ivris, which letter would be miraculous?
Ayin.
Right? Because...
What's
the letter
again?
Actually, a lot of them
were... What? Okay, right. Ayin is one which is the Hebrew use. You're right. There are more than one. What?
What do we call again?
Ashuris is the one on top.
Right.
And number 5 is Ivris. All the bottom ones that we'll go call Ivris. They're all variations of the same thing.
So what do they decide to use? Which one?
No, we don't know yet. We're just starting today.
Okay.
We'll find out.
5 letters of the miracle.
5 letters? Okay. Oh. What? So Chista said, Mem Shabbasamach, the Samach Shabbat Luchos, Nesarim Omdin. So clearly, he said every Mem. It sounds like he says every Mem. So that means, what? How is Mem written in the Luchos? Both, right? So if you took the way the contention of Gemara is that if you take an open mem and you close it up, it's a higher level. It's better. Okay, so it says my elasatum vaso pasuach gerue kamegara. If it was closed and you opened it up, right? So if you had a closed mem and you open up, then you are making it worse. Okay? Let's see Rashi here. Was wrong Rashi, but it's worth seeing. Iwui Kamaile, the first Rashi, Shohaisa Mem Sesuma Valuchos.
Wait, I can't find you.
Right on top.
Oh, okay.
Iwui Kamaile, Shohaisa Mem Sesuma Valuchos. The Mem in the Luchos was closed. Avo Mem Sucho Voisa Valuchos. There was no open Mem in the Luchos. Kamakinun Foresh, like the Gemara is about to explain, Matsapak. Sofi Mamorum, the famous line. What does the letters Mansapach have in common?
All the letters.
Those are all the letters of Hebrew alphabet which have different end letters. Mem, Mem Sofis. Nun, Nun Sofis. Tari, Tari Sofis. Tei Sofis. Chof, Chof Sofis. Right? So Mansapach are those letters, and the Gemara is going to say momentarily that matters. The fact that there are two of each of these letters is because the Nevi'im instituted two. We go right up, the one is going to say there is only one way of writing, and the assumption is for the Mem that the Doraisa way of writing it was that it should be closed, right? Which again doesn't work out according to any of these alphabets.
Right, brother, in the original scroll, There are only
Sefis,
there are no
Mem,
there are
Mem.
Like,
what? No, even the original Sefis Torah. The question is how we got to our Sefis Torah. You're right. According to Gemara at this stage, the original Sefis Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote, only closed Mem. Only final Mem. That's right. So the Gemara is not going to stay with this. Don't worry. But that's what the Gemara says at this point. So, why is that? The Kaves Gemara says the Mem, the Samech, Shabbaruchos, this is what Chista said, that the Mem and the Samech in the commandments. But Neis Hoyu Omdim, they stood miraculously. Lo Efshar Ukme, there's no way to sustain my Chista's statement. Ella B'Sesuma, unless you say that the Mem was a closed Mem. So why is that? That it has to be a miracle. The Horevat Sav HaYonire B'Shnei Avorim, since the writing was seen from both sides of the Luchos, Hava Lovi Tov. It should have fallen down in Rosh Hashanah Hoya Omen, if not for the fact that it stood miraculously. Ava Pesucha, but an open letter, right, the open Mem, Eibonais, there's no miracle if it stands because it has an open area with which it can connect. So therefore, Av Korhav Mansapach, Rabbi Yirmiyah, so therefore, the Mem Nun Tzadik Pei Chav, of the Rabbi Yirmiyah will say to Amar Sofim Amarum that the prophet
Sofer is a scout or somebody who gazes. The prophet gazes or scouts the future. That's why it's called the Sofer. So the Sofim Amaru, Bibsuchin Kamar, so must be that they initiated not the closed letters, but they initiated the open letters. The original, at least in the case of the Mem. That the Mem originally was closed, and then the prophet came and said, you know what, let's open it up. Okay? By the way, just to digress for a moment, the Mem represents a mikveh, right? Because the mikveh has 40 sa'ah of rainwater. So the closed Mem is supposed to symbolize, not supposed to, but it symbolizes the mikveh. Because it's like a closed pool in which you immerse yourself. So that's the Mem, which is the Mem which is closed represents that mikveh. What? Matcha 40. Matcha 40, right. Mem is the matcha, I didn't mention that. Right. Mem is the matcha 40. The open Mem, however, is interesting because an open Mem is made up of a chav and a vav. And a chav and a vav, many Hebrew letters are compounds. They're made up of other Hebrew letters. You can't see it here because we don't have Sefer Torah writing here. But in the Sefer Torah, a Mem is made of a chav and a vav together. Why is it that way? Because what's chav vav in Gematria? 26, right? And what's 26 in Gematria? The name of God. Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey is 26. Lamed is the same way, by the way. Lamed is also a chav, but the Vav is on top like that. So there's also 26. So the question is, which is actually holier, so to speak? The closed Mem or the open Mem? But the Gemara at this point assumes that the closed Mem is holier because it was the one which was written in the Luchos, even though it doesn't have that great gematria of 26.
What are the seven steps going up in the mikvah? I hear that was also
I don't know. I didn't even know there was a seven steps in there.
Not always.
Now I'm going to pay attention. Whenever I want to pay attention, how many steps there are.
Somebody told me like 6,000. They're like, I don't know why, but I heard it. I was like, really, why? I thought you might. I was hoping that you'd be like, oh yeah, there's seven steps, but now you're like, I don't even know there were seven steps.
I never counted.
I never did, but.
I have a quick question. On this chart, when there's gaps of a letter,
I'm
also going to be counting. From that time period to find out what that letter looked like.
That I don't
what
know.
Does it mean that the letter didn't exist and was replaced with
a letter? I don't know. I imagine those alphabets didn't exist. But you'd have to read the full entire
series of this one's more modern than the one above it, but there's missing letters. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just didn't find that letter.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe they didn't need it. I mean, some letters are not pronounced by some cultures, and not all these are actually strictly Hebrew alphabets. They're Phoenician alphabets, so maybe those cultures didn't have those
letters. Which letters was the Torah originally given it?
That's what we're going to talk. We haven't gotten there yet, but right now, we haven't fully explored the issue yet, but according to our Christo, it's clear, isn't it?
This one.
It's got to be the one we have, right? The one on top. Otherwise, the Mem is not a closed Mem.
Well, we know it's not, though.
Who said we know it's not?
I thought we knew it wasn't.
No, so far, we've just done one line in the Torah. According to the Torah, good, because we're going slow, so nobody gets lost here. But we're doing one line in the Gemara, and this one line, all we've seen so far, is going to Chisda, it seems. The original Sefer Torah, assuming it was the same as the Luchos, was given in Ksav HaShuritz, in the Assyrian handwriting, and it was given with closed Mems. There were no open Mems.
So why did they have a squiggly line in place of the younger?
What? The top, the very top level.
They're called the Assyrian?
Yes.
Oh, so
but you don't see the Sefer Torah.
That was the Hebrew script. I was confused.
No. Assyrian, what we call nowadays Hebrew is Assyrian. Okay. And what the ancient Hebrew is called Hebrew. That's the way it is. Okay, we're going to have to stop, Rabbi. So tomorrow we're going to have to go much quicker than we did today because we have to get the capitalistic grant
capable
of stuff. I'll make more copies for tomorrow. What?
And
capitalistic grant. Oh, yeah. No, for the other papers.
Oh.
Many other papers.
Six questions
on
the
Destiny Source
and all the other places.
It's great to understand. No, the Destiny Source actually been not through it. You're looking at times
weird, but it's weird.
Different type.
Okay, because there's letters that aren't recognizable.
Yeah, but it's a little bit of a mistake. When Judaic has all the later tables, actually compared all the various different variations. Above and a Zion, I believe, if I recall correctly.
Can I get
you
two?
Sure.
What does that equal?
Above and Zion is 13th.
You have the
Yadis also. Chet also is above and a Zion.
So what's 13? I
mean, that was on
my
bonus roll.
13,
he does the Brachman. 13 attributes of Brachman. For 13, 13 is 26.
Yeah, no, that's above and
a Zion. But this is what it means.